Welcome back to the Solid Foundations podcast. This is something that we're working on is our intro. Now that I got a team working with me every week, I get nice constructive criticism like, your intros suck. We need to do something about them. And so you're helping me with that, Bear. I'm very happy about that. And today we're going to start something new. So fill me in. What's the new intro? How do we do it?
It's called 10 seconds. So I would like to call it Gilbert and Bear's 10 seconds, where we just explain or just tell you guys about our week and how it went, so we could create a type of relationship or something you guys look forward to. If you guys are interested in my life or interested in this old man's life, you know, to each their own. So,
which if they're listening, they probably are. Yeah.
So it's going to go off. Okay, Coach Gilbert, Dad.
You can call me Coach.
Okay. Dad, what's your 10 seconds?
So my 10 seconds is, lately I've been really, like this year moving forward, I've been really wanting to start producing income, right? So I've been taking the last 5 years building Solid, a nonprofit. Any money that I did earn, usually put it back into the nonprofit, and got it to the point to where it is now. And I'm happy with it right now, and we're going to continue to grow, but there's still this entrepreneurial side of me, right? Mm-hmm. And I also want to make a decent living, not just be living off of, you know, the bare minimum. God's been good, giving me a place to stay, making sure I got food and can take care of the minimum bills. But there, that entrepreneur in me is like ready for more. I'm hungry. And so moving forward, I'm going to be thinking about ways how to produce income, right? I know I can't go to a job. I just know that I can't work for somebody else. And I've tried it and I know it's not for me. So I've been praying to God, like, let me know what you want me to do that I can be successful in. And, you know, one of the things he's telling me is you need to be, I want you to start this podcast again. I want you to go hard at it. And I'm like, well, that's not income producing. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and I also want you to teach people about self-awareness and help them learn about themselves so that they can learn how to start healing themselves. And it's like, well, I know, how do I do that? I don't want to start. If I start another business takes time to grow. And so I'm looking to make money now. Like I got things to pay and things that I want to live a certain way. And fortunate enough for me, he's blessed me with family businesses that I can go back into, and they're starting to get busy to the point where we can work out a deal and I can work there and know that when I'm working, I'm actually making money. And as we move forward in doing a podcast, teaching people about self-awareness and how to heal themselves.
Beautiful. That sounds like a positive life. And
you? What's your 10 seconds?
My 10 seconds was last week. If you guys listened to the podcast, you should have, not should have, but you would have heard that I had a competition coming up. I got first place for my white and blue belt division. Very proud of myself. I had fun. And I have another competition coming up, so I've just been training a lot more than I usually do, kind of taking a step back from the gym, which kind of hurts me a little bit, but at the end, it's for the better. And you were talking about self-awareness. Can we dive into that a little bit more?
Yeah, just real quick, the video of your last competition, they're all on my IG. So if you want to watch Coach Bear be about what she says she does, you can actually see it in person and watch those. But yeah, we could dive right in. Is there something you wanted to dive in on, or you want me to just tell you?
Self-aware. Can you explain what self-awareness one more time?
So self-awareness is something that you know yourself, how you tick, how you act, why you react to certain things. And even though it sounds like everybody would know that, it's actually pretty rare. People are set in their ways from like an early age, and they just go upon life reacting, not necessarily taking the time to really learn about themselves. And this becomes an issue when, as an adult, you're facing problems that you think are like the problems that you think as an adult, you're facing problems that are adult problems,
mm-hmm.
but you're handling it like a little kid would, because you haven't grown. You don't even know that, right? A lot of people see the problem at hand, but that's just the symptom of the root cause of a problem. And so, you know, you've worked with me for years, and there's a lot of times where you come to me with something and we're working on it, and there's not one like a textbook way of this is how you handle a problem, because each person's different, right? And so there's been problems with you where I'm like, Bear, I can't solve this for you. You need mm-hmm. to solve it. I can help you and guide you, but you're going to need to do the work, and you're going to have to do some questions asking detective work yourself. And so what I put together here was a timeline, a map of a problem that I was facing as an adult, and then tracing it back to what the actual problem is. So this is going to be a tool for you and for others to learn of how they can get to the root cause of a problem. And you'll see here in it, like from where we're starting, because we're starting kind of present day, all the way back years and years. And you'll see how the problem I'm facing now is so different from what the actual mm-hmm. problem was. But it's important. You know, when I coach people, there's some times where you're like, if there's something in your past that's bothering you, we can say, well, what do you want your future to be like? We don't necessarily need to go back and change mm-hmm. the way, or dig deep about find out what your past was. It's about, if you don't like the way it is, we can change it moving forward. But there's also some helpful to it. There's some helpfulness to it. Like if you're driving in a car, you're not going to be driving looking in the rearview mirror, right? What's mm-hmm. going to happen if you do that?
Crash.
You're going to crash, right? So you don't move forward in life looking like what happened in your past. But you want to glance up in that rear view so you make sure nothing's coming mm-hmm. from your past and coming up from behind you and potentially being dangerous. Okay, so today I want you to be a detective. We got live going, so if live wants to ask any questions, we're going to go step by step. Okay, I'm going to say the age that I was going through certain issues. Well, so let me rewind a little bit. So this whole concept is where my phobia of confrontation came from, right? And so I'm going to start at this age, what I'm going through, and then I'm going to go back in the timeline, and then I'm going to say, this is actually what the coping mechanism that I took mm-hmm. with me from a younger age into my older age. And then we'll go back, okay, step by step, what I was going through at that time, the coping mechanism I brought in. And we're going to go through that. And it might be hard. It might be, you know, we'll play it by ear. We'll see how easy it is to keep track of it.
Mm-hmm.
But once we get there, we can always move forward, because it's obviously going to make so much more sense when you start from the beginning and go to the end.
Mm-hmm. Instead of...
But when you're not self-aware of you got to start now and be able to work mm-hmm. your way back. So this will be a good tool and exercise.
Beautiful. I'm excited.
You ready for that?
Stay ready.
Did you know I had a phobia of confrontation?
I wouldn't say a phobia, but I would assume I got my fear of confrontation from somebody, so.
Okay. Mm-mm. Okay, here we go. So from about 25 to present day, okay? When I first started seeing now wifey, certain family members would give her a hard time and say and do rude and mean things. All right? You laugh because you're one of them. You got Katrina laughing over there because she was one of them. But just one of them. Okay, just one of them. There were others. And at first, I took the stance. It was like, well, if you're going to be around me, this is what it's going to be like. You know, I was this was a very selfish time in my life.
Yeah, okay?
It was a very selfish time in my life, and I'm not proud of how I acted, but I want to be completely honest, because if I'm not, how are people going to learn? I can't like hide certain mm-hmm. things. And like we talk about, anything that has happened, I'm actually grateful for it happened, because now it's mm-hmm. made me the person I am. But so we'll keep going. As time went on, I encouraged her to speak her mind. And when arguments happened, I would just lay back and watch them play out.
Crazy. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if things got physical, I would step in and break it up. If it was outside of the family and it was like it was a woman, mm-hmm. I would let her go at it. It was like, that's your business. And I'm here just to make sure nobody else jumps in or whatnot. And if it had to do with the male, because my wife is very aggressive, she speaks her mind, and there's mm-hmm. been plenty, there's been situations where she's letting a male know what she thinks, and whether he likes to hear it or not, she's going to voice it. And so in those instances too, I don't speak up and start putting mm-hmm. my two cents in, but I'm there waiting. At this point in time, there is not going to be any conflict with her. Whether mm-hmm. if she swings on him, I'm jumping on him. If he swings mm-hmm. on her, it's not going to be good for him, you know?
And see, in those situations, you say you have a phobia of confrontation. Is it a phobia, or you just much rather not say things that is just not really necessary, but we're still going to handle business if it comes down to it? That's what I'm hearing.
So great question. My phobia is cured, okay? My phobia is cured. So this is a journey of how I cured it
mm-hmm.
and all the wrong ways and all the different ways and the learning processes of doing it.
So I'm going to learn later down.
You're going to learn. Story? Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to learn later down, because even though at some point in my time, I felt like, oh, I'm cured, I'm not afraid mm-hmm. of confrontation anymore, there was actually still something inside me that was. It was just, it looked different now because
mm-hmm.
I handled it different. And so I just had this perspective, you know, I had this perspective that it doesn't matter who's talking bad about you or has something to say, like, you should defend yourself. And that was my mindset at the time. And then so going back, okay, this is the strat. So before this, going into this era that I just mm-hmm. told you about, this is the coping mechanism that I had developed going into this era. I had started training jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu humbled me. I had to learn like to tap out. You know, you can. There's only like so much you can have in an ego when you actually got to submit mm-hmm. to somebody. That's why we call it submission, because you're submitting mm-hmm. to somebody. It also made me realize that I didn't know how to fight. Like, I was fighting a lot as a teen and in my young adulthood, thinking that I knew how to fight, mm-hmm. but I was just fighting other people who were street fighters and didn't know how to really fight. And so being around that really taught me that I didn't know. It was a release for pent-up aggressiveness, and I was okay with using words to de-escalate situations. And I developed like a newfound confidence, but like a real confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, I was like, it's dangerous, because I thought I was like really confident. I could mm-hmm. handle myself. Like, but it wasn't until I started training jiu-jitsu where like, damn, I was actually putting myself in a lot of danger. Like, now
yeah.
I'm fearful for what I was doing, the dangerous situations I was always in, or that I was in a lot. And so now we're going back to me to like 21 through 33 and the things I was going through. Okay. So most of this took place downtown, and going out downtown. This era I call bully the bullies. So I would, you know, downtown, I would purposely see somebody who in my mind, I took as, oh, this could be competition in some way. And so I would like go bump shoulders. I would talk to their girl.
Oh my goodness.
I would stare, you know, and then I would get in their space just like to get around them to see if
they're anything. Gonna do something.
Yeah. I wouldn't like just go up and like shove and like punch somebody, but I would do these things, you know, that
weren't necessary.
Yeah, that weren't necessary. If I seen them being a dick, I would go over, like say I seen them being a dick to somebody. Like say they were being a dick to somebody, and I could see it from a wash away because of people watching.
But doing what you're doing to him to other people, basically.
Well, let's just say like it's a new situation. Mm-hmm. Keep me out of it for right now. I'm people watching, and yeah, I see him being a dick to somebody. I would go over there, and whatever like that person did that caused the, let's say, the bully to be a dick to him, I would do the same thing. So let's just say, like, you know, they're shooting pool, and the bully is going to take a shot, and the guy's like standing like a foot away from him. He's like being an asshole, like, get the hell away. You see, I'm trying to shoot right here. Cause, just for whatever reason. So I would go over there and I would stand close. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I would stand like really close and just like hope, like, please say something. Yeah. Please say something. So I would do things like that. I wouldn't have anger or even think about doing this unless I was drinking or in that type of environment. So it's not like throughout the day I was like, man, I wanna go find people that are being mean to other people and check them. That wasn't even a thought in my head. It was just when I would go out and be in that environment of downtown and a bunch of people and drinking, that's the stuff that I would do.
But that comes from deep down inside. That's because you feel that way when you're sober, but something when you drink, it comes out. What, like, how does that happen?
So this is your exact job right here, right? Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, this project we're doing right now is figuring out why I had a phobia of confrontation. So you're trying to narrow down of why.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is it coming from?
Like, what needs were you hitting to do something like that? You would have to hit some sort of needs or you wouldn't have been doing it. Like, significance. I think significance, if I was going to guess.
So you're using one of the tools that I've taught you is the six human needs, right? Certainty, uncertainty, variety, significance, love, connection, growth, and contribution. So that's a great way. You know, everything we do is to meet one or two of those needs at a high level. And that it's involved in every decision we make. So you're right on. You got your tools. So use those as we're going, right? And then, so obviously, this sort of behavior put me in so many unnecessary, dangerous situations. So moving on. Okay, so this is the coping mechanism that I was using that put me in that era that I just told you about.
What do you mean by coping? Like, you fighting people? Is that a way of coping? Or am I missing something?
So now picture what I remember what I just explained to you, my behavior. Now I'm going to tell you my coping mechanism that I was using to cover my fear of confrontation going into that era, okay? And then, like I said, it's going to be hard to go backwards, but it'll make more sense when we go all forward. But I want you to exercise this because you have to start from now and work your way back, okay? And so the mechanism that I had going into that time I just discussed was I feel real confident that I'll step up to whatever confrontation comes my way. I develop a deep trust in myself that I will handle situations in a way that will make me feel content and proud. So that was what I'm feeling. That's what's going through my head as I'm doing everything I just told you about, right? And so now, go back. 17 through 21. I call this era, I won't accept disrespect. I would go looking for people over things that happened to people I cared about, even though I wasn't there when it happened. And so it's one thing to like be protective. We're there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't want the people I care about to get hurt or be in danger. So let's handle the situation there and get us to safety. Right? That's legit. That's a good thing to do. But me, at this time, I would go, even though they were out of danger now, I would go looking for the mm-hmm. people. And so I got into fights that shifted my mindset and gave me a perspective that no one was badder than me. No one is out of my league. I was used to fighting like my peers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously I was from somewhere, and there's older homies, and then there's another side of town and there's older homies. And so I end up getting in a fight with these certain people that I look mm-hmm. up to and thought to me like, because obviously as a youngster, you look up to the older guys and be like, oh, I want to mm-hmm. be like them and do what they do. So I end up getting in situations where I have to fight an older homie of mine, and I have to fight a dude from the opposite side of town who's an older homie. And that kind of, like I said, mm-hmm. shifted my mindset after it happened. Of what I thought of myself. I went places knowing there would be groups that I would potentially have to face, but did it anyways. And I was pumped to do so when I got the call. So, you know, during this time, like I said, I'm 17 through 21. My little brother is 4.5 years younger than me. My sisters are like 7 years younger than me. So let's say I'm 20, he's like 16, they're like 13, they're in their prime of they're going out and hanging mm-hmm. out. So if they go out or something happens, I'm getting a phone call. At the time, my friends or homies, obviously there's always going to be something that's happening. And so I would go and handle situations or involve myself with situations, I should say, where it didn't even have anything to do with me. When it comes to family, like I said, I could have easily just gone and, are you guys out of danger now? I didn't have mm-hmm. to go and like actually fight, you know? And there's this one there during this time. I have a dream. I don't remember a lot of dreams. And to say that this dream still like sticks out years and years later, it had a profound effect on me. And this dream was like, I had a dream where some guy kills my mom. And I could feel like this piece of right?
Mm-hmm.
Has the audacity to kill my mom. But the thing was, in the dream, I had no remorse for my mom being dead, being killed.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling was the disrespect that this guy killed my mom, you know? And yeah. And I even remember like talking to your grandma, talking to my mom. She's been into mm-hmm. dreams for a long time with dream books. And I told her, and she read off of what it meant. I thought kind of she was going to be like, well, that's messed
yeah,
up.
You know? Didn't
yeah,
care.
You didn't care. But she wasn't like that mm-hmm. at all. She's like, was breaking it down to what the meaning of it was. And I don't remember word for word about what the meaning was, but that always stuck out to me as like, that's a bad thing, Gil. Like, you're in your dream, you're so caught up on somebody did something mm-hmm. to disrespect you over your kill, like no remorse mm-hmm. for your mom. And so that stuck out to me. So my strategy to cope going into that era. And you stop me with any questions that you got at any time, all right?
Okay.
And Jali, if you have any questions over there, you let me know. I was reminded how fun and exhilarating fighting was. Like I grew up fighting with my mm-hmm. cousins, and my mom made it a point to always teach us how to fight, and we would fight with cousins, brothers, and sisters. And so I learned that being willing to fight earned you respect, and that being eager to fight brought on admiration and fear. So now I would go out of my way to fight if I felt fear and or intimidation. So now, if you are you starting to be able to put the pieces together, like I'm telling you, this was my strategy to cope, mm-hmm. and you can see how it affects my behavior in the future.
I wouldn't say like affect, like when I keep on thinking about it, it's like if you're afraid to do something, the best way to get over it is to do it. So you're telling me you're afraid of confrontation, but any chance you got, you're going there to like confront somebody. So does that, isn't that not a good way to do so? I mean, probably not the healthiest way, but at the end of the day, you're still getting over your fear.
There's different mm-hmm. ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of what you want to get to the most healthiest, mm-hmm. like safe version of solving your problems. But yeah, you're right. That is a definite way to cope with something. If you're afraid of it, go mm-hmm. into it. And you can see how that kind of, you're seeing it evolving of how yeah. it went, but backwards.
Yeah. Can you remember, like, are you asking yourself questions and like inside your head, like, why am I this way? Or it's just like, you're just reacting.
At this point in my life, no. I'm like mm-hmm. thinking like, I got it handled. Like,
so no self-awareness whatsoever.
Mm-mm. Absolutely not. Just going living, mm-hmm. just being reactive, really. If I was confronted by someone, it would mean I'm punching them first with no words. Like I had seen too many people get sucker punched, like
while talking,
you know, like bomb, oh, you're mm-hmm. boom, 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 and somebody just get punched. There'd be sometimes, especially growing up the way I did as a teenager, somebody just standing next to you, and because you did something wrong and that they don't want to square up with you,
they just
get close to you, mm-hmm. pretend like they're your friend, and then boom, just punch you. So I never wanted that to happen. And the other thing about it was that even if I wanted to talk, like if somebody confronted me and used words,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't even talk if I wanted to, because all I wanted to do was like burst out in tears and start crying. I literally couldn't. Like I would shake and I'd like mm-hmm. my voice would crack. And so as soon as I learned that, I'm like, oh yeah, definitely ain't talking. It was just mm-hmm. it was easier to just punch somebody and get punched back, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
Circling back to the you never wanted to get sucker punched. Is that like the main reason? Because to this day, like, I can't tell you the story on how it happened, but I do remember a long time ago you telling me, like, never leave your back open. Like, if you're in a big group, make sure your back's towards a wall, or like you're in a corner so you could watch everything. Does that come from?
Yeah, that comes from it. That definitely comes from it. One, you want to know where your exit mm-hmm. is. You want to have your back towards a wall, so that's less things you got to worry about. You mm-hmm. kind of see everything in front of you. But yeah, that's a lot of where that came from, and also just knowledge mm-hmm. being given to me from my parents and my theos and stuff like that.
That's something that's stuck with me. Anytime I'm somewhere, I'm always like, where can
I go? It's definitely good, mm-hmm. and that can just be like someone being around you and you're like, what? I don't know. Mm-hmm. This person has no business being here, right?
Yeah.
Around in my bubble like this, you know, and adjusting accordingly. Mm-hmm. If I felt there was any level of threat in the vicinity, I would put myself in the situation to see if they had a problem. And so kind of like what I told you about being in the clubs, like,
mm-hmm.
so this would be at a younger age, me being like if a dude from the opposite side mm-hmm. of town and we're in the same area, like I I had this feeling like I can't look away. I can't, if anything, I need to be closer to him. I may not, I'm not going to be like all banging on him or anything like that, because that never was really me. But I wanted to put myself in a situation to where he knew where I was, and if he wanted to say something, then I wasn't going to back down.
At this time, did you have some liquid courage, or you're...
No. No, not at this time. And so...
Does Alive have any questions?
I don't believe so.
Okay, and so what... This strategy to cope that I just told you, the reason why I felt it was proof that it was good and that's the way it should be was because now no, I wasn't getting picked on. And so now we go back to 14, 16, okay? This is the age, 14 to 16. This era I call testing myself. So this is high school. From junior high, I'm probably like 5'2" maybe or so. I don't know. It's hard. But I know that I had a growth spurt and I grew to 5'11". Same height that I am now, except for I was 40 pounds lighter, like 145 pounds. So I had the growth spurt. I was in a new environment. It was like a fresh start for me from junior high. I had an older cousin that went there. I had never had the chance to go to school with an older cousin. Obviously, I don't have any older brothers or sisters. And I had school football. So this was different. You know, I played sports all growing up, but these were in like city leagues. So you have kids from all different schools going and you team up with them. Well, this was high school football was different because you all go to the same school. So probably more better off that we're going to have camaraderie, we're build friendships and teammates, you know. And I also had my Thea's house to go for lunch because first year you can go off of campus. I'd never did that before till I got to high school. So I end up in practice one day. We're throwing the ball like before practice and we're doing just tackling but with no pads on, and so I catch a ball, someone tackles me by my leg and wraps my arms up, and I fall on my face, like one side of my face, and it ends up giving me what they call a facial palsy. I didn't know what it was at the time, but when all the nerves in my face and half of my face were dead, so it was just like drooping, right? So we didn't know. We went to the hospital and that's when they told me, oh, you got facial palsy, there's nothing we can do, you just got to give it time and it should heal on its own. And so now my fresh start in high school, I'm walking around with like a half drooped face. I didn't fit in with my cousin's friend. So I had my cousin there and he was actually very good at football. And his friends were like really good at football. And they were good dudes to me. They even let me hang out with them. But I didn't like click with them. I was kind of like shadow. And to me, I was like, well, I have no problem being alone. I don't mind being alone, so
it's good.
Might as well just be by myself then. So I stopped hanging out with them, you know. And my Thea's house that I would go to lunch to, because I didn't sit during lunch just by myself on campus. So I went off campus and I had the house to go to. And I could just chill, you know, by myself and lunch over, go back to school. No big deal. Well, a girl that I knew and kind of had known growing up, and we even had like played sports together, ends up saying, hey, can I go with you and eat lunch? And so I say, yeah, she comes to lunch. It just happens to be my Thea comes home and obviously thinks that we're probably doing something. I never asked her permission, hey, can somebody even come over? But now it's like a girl in their house, so I'm guessing she's thinking I'm doing something I'm not supposed to be and being disrespectful in her house. And so she ends up saying I can't be in the house anymore. Okay. You know this story. Wow. I'm walking through the main hallway. I get snatched up by my neck, feet dangling in the air, and thrown to the side. Tears and worthlessness is what I, like tears in my eyes and just this feeling of like being worthless. I had this feeling like of worthlessness because I can really remember the person just turning around, not like watching me, just kind of just turn around, boom, like fresh meat, mm-hmm. and just throws me, right? Dangles me and then throws me. I felt like I wasn't even important enough to be singled out and to like even know my, like even know my name. So my existing way of coping was shattered. So keep note of that. My existing way of coping was shattered because I'm going to go over what my strategy to cope was going into high school. That was shattered. No matter how hard I tried to be invisible, I wouldn't be left alone. And being able to act like it didn't bother me didn't even matter because nobody cared if it did or it didn't. Don't care about, so now I don't care about grades. I don't want to play sports. I start ditching class, smoking weed, drinking, hanging out with dudes from the neighborhood. And I get into my first street fight and I'm the one who starts it.
So, okay, now I'm seeing how that cope, the one that, that coping kind of evolved. But would you say that that one incident was the one that broke the camel's back? How they used, like,
the straw that broke the camel's back?
Yeah. For a change, you need like either a traumatic experience
or... You don't need it, but most people, yeah. That's what it comes to. You're exactly right. I think it had a lot to do with it being the straw that broke the camel's back. But like I explained as well, it was something different as well. Like, and it'll make more sense in the next one. But it was like, man, if I could just be invisible, I'm fine. Like, nobody's got to know me. I go through all my whole school years. Nobody got to know me. I don't got to have any friends. And so when that happened... Now I didn't even have that. Mm-hmm. So it's like I couldn't be just invisible if I wanted to, you know? And that's that what...
Coping wasn't working, so now you had to find a new way.
I was forced to find a new way. So now you can start seeing forward. Mm-hmm. Now you start seeing, oh, now it's making sense of why you're like that, okay? So now we go backwards. So my coping mechanism going into that era of testing myself. I would brace myself for school days. So this is the 11 to 14 year old, my strategy to cope going into the 14, 16 year old I just told you. I would brace myself for school days knowing that I may have to deal with conflict. I could laugh it off. I could pretend it didn't hurt. I would, so remember what I just told you, okay? There'd be times I would do this a lot at home. I would stare in the mirror and wonder why kids were so mean to me, but know nothing was wrong with me.
You knew that?
Yeah. Like, I would literally look in the mirror and I'd wonder, like, why are people like so mean to me? I'm cute. Like, I'm a good, I'm a cute looking kid, you know? Like, I'm a sweetheart. Mm-hmm. And I would literally say that there wasn't a point in time, and I give all the credit to my parents, building that self-confidence in me, of like, I knew I never blamed it. Like, something's wrong with me. I wondered like, why are they doing that to me? And I think that's so big because it probably could have went very dark, you know, if I blamed myself. And so what proved to me that this strategy worked during that era was I didn't get in any fights and things wouldn't escalate if I just took it in stride. So
I had a quick question. Yeah. How are you saying, like, you think your mom or your parents for giving that self-confidence, and that kind of goes into our last podcast and how we're talking, how you have to mold your children when they're young and instill those confidence. So do you have any memory of how, what they did to instill that confidence in you? Because not a lot of people have that.
Yeah, a lot of love, affection, and words. words of affirmation work. You know, I don't want to get too far off
yeah. the
topic. I want to stay in line, but words of affirmation definitely work. Telling your kid that they're beautiful, they're handsome, they're good looking, they're smart, they're sweet,
mm-hmm.
Sticks with you.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And maybe we could touch base going mm-hmm. forward, but let's keep on topic going back. Like I said, I thought that way of coping worked because I didn't get any fights. Like people would maybe shove me, push me, trip me, stuff like that. But I didn't have to fight mm-hmm. as long as I just like, oh, that's funny. Or just, stay quiet. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't cry, then it was just like, mm-hmm. it worked. Like I could handle that. So that was my coping mechanism going into my testing myself area. So 11 to 14, I call this my era of trying to be invisible. It didn't take me long to become timid in junior high. Elementary school was very chill, and it didn't prepare me at all for the change to come. So not only was I going to junior high now from elementary, but it was the year that I was supposed to go into sixth grade, they switched junior high to a middle school. So I actually started junior high at sixth grade instead of seventh grade. All of a sudden, I was around kids who were more experienced, mature, bigger, and stronger, and I became very intimidated by their aggressiveness. I would become terrified when hearing of a school fight that was to happen. When I would get pushed or hit, my auto response was to do it back, but then I would freeze in fear. Although I was quiet and stayed out of the way, conflicts would still find me. Are you getting any clues? You're getting closer to...
Yeah, well, the second story, I kind of started piecing things together.
So. Where we started off, you're like, well, you don't sound like you're mm-hmm. afraid of conflict, right? And now you're starting to see where the root cause of it is. So now we go back. My strategy to cope going in to that trying to be invisible era. I tell myself this is just another occurrence, no different from the others. Everything will return to normal. Everything will be okay. All I need to do is be quiet, go unnoticed, and wait it out. And what proved to me that this coping mechanism worked at that age, between 8 and 11, was that if I would see my parents argue, and I would see my family, like different family gatherings, I'd see family members argue and sometimes even get like physical.
Mm-hmm.
But days after, it all went back to normal. And so if I just stayed quiet, don't get bothered, don't get riled, mm-hmm. just understand, it'll go back to normal. Don't make a scene of it. Don't do anything. Just be quiet and let it all go back. Are you good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now this is the origin point. Okay, this is somewhere between 4 and 8. I don't remember the exact age, but this is what I've traced it back to. And I'll leave the name of the era to the very last. And I'll tell you what I went through. So this is, remember where we started with this story. And now you're going to see where it began. So when my parents would have an argument, I would be terrified that they would split up and I would lose my family.
You used to think of that?
Mm-hmm. My earliest memory of this was my parents had an argument where I was sitting nearby. My mom was yelling and throwing my dad's clothes in a pile, telling him to take his things and leave. My dad was quiet and showing no physical emotion. I was frozen, tears in my eyes, and felt helpless. I had never witnessed them do this before. So I thought they were done and that there was nothing I could do to fix it. And this era is called Terrified I Would Lose My Family. And so now we can kind of go forward and it'll make a whole lot more sense going. But what connections did you make from where we started to where it began? Would there be any clue of where we started, of how it began?
For me, it's easier to go how it started to where you're at now, because I've seen it. Like when you're 8 or 4 or 8, I kind of see where you learned how to be quiet. You saw your dad be quiet, kind of stay to himself, and then you go until you're 13 to 14 where you're kind of testing out, like, oh, being quiet is kind of working for me. So let me continue, and you continue to that until you're like 17, going to high school, where being quiet was taken away from you, where that didn't work. So now you're, and then you start hanging out with people, not really good people to be hanging out with, but they kind of gave you a new coping where, hey, like if I do this and that, like fighting, okay, that's going to help. It's helping you. So that's your new coping mechanism. And then you go into your older age where you kind of are testing out, like, fighting people, and it is working for you. Mm-hmm. So I can see, and then go on. So I definitely see what you said is true.
Do you see the drastic change of, you know, let's say I got this problem of bumping into people and making them see if, like, hey, I'm mm-hmm. around here, you got a problem, I'm mm-hmm. right here, that it all stemmed from something of me being terrified of losing my family. It doesn't make yeah. sense, right? It doesn't make sense. But that's what we do, and I'm going to break mm-hmm. it down to you of how this is like building barrier upon barrier till you get so far you don't even know what you're protecting anymore. You're just mm-hmm. reacting.
Right? Doing what you're used to or comfortable with.
Yeah. It's like, let's say, you know what inflation is, right? Mm. Inflation with money.
Yeah.
It's like your money lose value over time. But let's say we had an old relative from back in the 1800s. They put in like a $10 in there, and then they wanted to save it for their kid if it got like a mm-hmm. rainy day. $10 back in the day was like $300 and something, so it was mm-hmm. big to them, you know. And so they pass it down, the next generation takes it, and all they know is they were told, is like from their parent, was like, take care of this, it's very special, and protect it with your life because you may need it one day. And it gets handed from mm-hmm. generation, and as it gets handed to one generation to the next, it kind of ends up, you forget why you were even protecting it, right? Mm-hmm. So you get so far down the road, and like one, let's say that one, like 200 years later, 2024, mm-hmm. you go to open up that thing that's you've been lugging mm-hmm. around, and like, I'm tired of lugging this around, but it's been, mm-hmm. it's just too much. It's so important. Let me see what's in there. You open it up and it's $10. And you're like, really? This don't even have any value. Like, it doesn't even buy yeah. me a burrito now. But you've been carrying that thing around because mm-hmm. somebody told you that it was important. And in this case, it's your previous self saying, hey, protect this. Mm-hmm. Protect this, protect this. And there's layers of protection that you got to work through to find that root cause of the problem. And so you see me starting here. This is why communication is so important, because as a kid, you don't have a lot of wisdom in this world, right? So everything that happens to you, especially when it's something like dramatic, unless somebody tells you and explains to you why and what it means and how you can cope with it,
your brain's gonna...
You're gonna yeah. make up your own solution, mm-hmm. right? So I made up a solution around, let's say, like 4 years old, of how to protect myself from being terrified. And I would package it up, mm-hmm. and send and use that into my future self. Okay, so if I'm terrified of losing, every time something happens, I'm like, I get this instant reaction of like, to me, it's that 4-year-old thinking he's gonna lose his family,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's terrifying to me. But then I learn, well, you're not gonna lose your family. They're just people have arguments, mm-hmm. and it just goes back to normal, you know. And it's something that it almost becomes almost funny, like ha ha. They're like throwing the clothes. Just, they're gonna pick it all back up, and it's like, what's even going on? One person's not talking, the other's yelling, and so you just be like, cool. It'll go back to normal.
That's how it is.
Yeah. So then you go in, you know, I go into junior high with that mindset, mm-hmm. and things start happening to me. I should be standing up for myself, right? Now, remember, I said, my mom showed mm-hmm. us how to fight. Like, she literally taught us how to fight and would let us spar with each other. So that was in me. But that wasn't my coping mechanism. My coping mechanism was to just, when conflict would happen, I would react. And that was to just let it be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I let it be. I'm fine with it. But then I go into high school.
Well, you can't.
And I just want to be invisible, man. Just like, leave me alone. And I just... let me get through this, mm-hmm. and I'll go into adulthood like this, you know. But God is so good. If you're not going to grow on your own and be proactive, mm-hmm. He will do things to make you react. And luckily for me, He put that person to snatch me by my neck and throw me. He put it so that I had nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
I had to change, right? But now I go from that 14 to 16, like, okay, if that's how it's going to be, boom,
mm-hmm.
I got to fight. And instead of letting it happen to me, I'm going to go start them. And then so I go, now I'm starting fights. Mm-hmm. And then now I get this taste of, oh, man, I get this admiration now. People want to be my friends. Now, yeah, I get that significance. Exactly. There's a lot of uncertainty mm-hmm. there. The variety that comes with it.
Exciting.
And I start developing, you know, confidence to what mm-hmm. I thought was confidence. And so that's why now I get addicted to kind of like testing myself.
Because I heard if it's hitting 3 or more needs, that's when it starts to come.
It becomes an addiction,
mm-hmm.
right? So if it meets 3 of your needs on a high level, it becomes an addiction.
And that's what you would say happened?
I wouldn't say I got addicted to mm-hmm. fighting. I would say I would get these terrifying feelings that if I didn't go mm-hmm. do it, it was like I would be feeling helpless and terrified. And I didn't want that. So I knew I couldn't be invisible. So I might as well just go and fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then your actions lead to new behaviors. And so now I go from there. And like I said, I go from testing myself over and over. And of course, you test yourself. You get better and better and more confident at things. So then I go into adulthood with this coping mechanism. But now there's nobody picking on me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I still interpret any form of confrontation, it's still hitting on a level where I don't, even though it's in reality me terrified of losing my family at that age, mm-hmm. It's just like, no, this person's being disrespectful or this person needs to be checked. You know, that's mm-hmm. how it evolved over time.
But at the end of the day, it's from the root.
It's from the root problem. From the root problem. And that's what I want you to understand, is that what you're trying to solve now
mm-hmm.
is rarely the case. You got to dig deep and solve that problem. And like I said, so going forward, me testing myself and getting into fights and kept going until I started training jiu-jitsu. And that shifted my whole world around. And now, you know, we began with my wife and the mm-hmm. conflicts that we had in the family. Excuse me. But that was our starting point. I didn't tell you what my strategy to cope with that was now, right? Because we went backward from that. And so what I've learned from all these years and then realizing mm-hmm. what my actual problem was that I don't handle things the way I would for me, right? Rather, I handle them for someone the way that they would want it handled for them. That makes them feel safe, cared for, and respected. And because I would handle some, I don't care if it's your mom, your dad, your grandma, your grandpa, if they're going to be disrespectful to me, I'm going to speak up for myself. You know, I was so self-absorbed with how I would handle something that I should have been a better man to my woman and made her ask her mm-hmm. what's going to make you feel like you're loved and cared mm-hmm. for and protected and handle it that way. And so that's what I've been doing, my best to be better and better at for her. And because she's an aggressive woman, you know, mm-hmm. and so she has a mind of her own and a mouth that she is not going to keep quiet for anybody now, because she's mm-hmm. grown a lot too, and now she's not going to. Yeah. And so I always want to do my best to let her know that she has me in her corner no matter what.
Does she do the same for you? Do you...
So I'm a little different, right? Like, mm-hmm. well, one, I really don't get in any
yeah.
conflicts anymore. And I think that comes from being healed.
Mm-hmm.
But
when you say that, being healed, does that mean she's not healed?
She has her own story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about, like, my healing. Because if you look at my story, there was a long time ago where people stopped approaching me and giving me conflict. I ended up now going to go look for it a lot. And so that's why I'm saying I don't have that mm-hmm. anymore at all. And if anything, I would talk myself out of a situation. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't need to go yeah. there, man, you know? And, but like when you asked, would she speak up for me? So this is the whole thing, the way that I don't want anybody mm-hmm. to speak up for me. I take it as like, you think that I can't handle myself. Yeah. Like, that's how I would have took it. Like, you don't think you could handle myself. Now it's like, no, I don't. To me, I think I'm the best person to talk about what's on my mind. Mm-hmm. I don't need anybody yeah. else throwing their 2 cents in or putting it. I feel mm-hmm. the most confident when I'm speaking for myself. So I don't want anybody speaking up.
And I understand that. But the reason why I asked that is because you said you asked her on how she could feel more loved.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of like, well, how do you, are you feel loved?
Oh, like, yeah. 100%. I know that.
Just taking care of you.
Yeah, I know that she's going to mm-hmm. pounce and she's going to, she's ready to go. And it's a whole different thing. It's like, one, that, yeah, I know she's going to stand up for me and have my back in whatever vicinity. But the other thing about it is, she can do physical damage as well. So, I don't have like this big group of friends. You don't see me like going, oh, I'm going out with friends. The people I go out with is my family and mostly my wife. And so her and I go travel the world. Mm-hmm. We're in vulnerable situations where we don't know anybody or anybody to call or thousands of miles away. But I always feel comfortable. Like I have a partner with me that I don't just have to protect if something mm-hmm. happens. Like, she could handle yeah. some of it as well. So no, I feel really good and fortunate to have a partner like her as my wife.
It's a beautiful thing. And I remember you talking about how jiu-jitsu kind of instilled confidence in you. Mm-hmm. And I know we do the same thing for kids 5 to 11, yeah, doing martial arts. And I was wondering, is there any programs or how people could help? Because I know people would love to help instill confidence, but don't have.
Yeah, there is a way. There's something we call the BRIC program. And I, even though we have probably about 7 members in it, I've never really advertised it or put it out there, but I want to do a better job of that. Not only because the BRIC program, what it is monthly subscriptions from donors in a community that go into Solid. So it helps there, but it's also a way for the community. Like, people have needs to contribute. That's one of the needs, right? We all have a need to contribute. And so sometimes you don't know how. Like, something's not as fulfilling as one another thing could be.
And so they might be a high D, a high I, right?
On their personality type, what their experiences were growing up. And so I want them to know that there's a thing called the BRIC program at Solid Foundations. It's a monthly subscription. You get a nice size of what we call a brick on our wall in the facility with your name on it, because I want kids to know that there's people in the community who are investing in them. And that helps goes to allowing us to offer free classes so kids can come in and try, you know, show up, so kids can show up and be exposed to something that they may not have ever been exposed to. And then a portion of it goes to us being able to offer different classes. Like, our foundational classes are martial arts, so kids learn how to defend themselves and stick up for others. Work ethic, where they learn a trade skill and how to earn money so they can learn how to earn a living long before they become an adult. And then fitness, because health is wealth. You could have all the money, you could have all the relationships, but if you're sick in bed and you can't get out of bed, you're not going to be able to enjoy any of those things. So those are the foundational courses. But with the BRIC program and us getting funding, like, there's a lot of creative stuff we could be teaching the kids more on after they learn these foundational things. So yeah, the BRIC program is a way that is a great way for the community to support Solid.
Beautiful.
And you had mentioned, on the subject of jiu-jitsu, you had mentioned you competing. You got a big tournament coming up. And I know, I think that's just something you want to do, is just continue to train,
challenge,
compete.
Yep.
And you could use some sponsors. And so what is a sponsor? Tell me, like, what does a sponsor get if they sponsor you?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Because they're going to want to know, you know. And it doesn't need to be something. You just say, hey, you get to know that when you're seeing me compete, that you helped make it possible. Because it costs money to travel, to stay in hotels, you know, and to train.
It does for me what it looks like for me. Like, if someone were to sponsor me, and it depends on how they are. They want their business to be shouted out either on my Instagram, where I could get a rash guard with their name on the back, or they just want to be able to support me and continue to see me grow as a person or as a woman. I feel like there's many ways where they could get what they put in.
Yeah, on your last video that we post with your championship match, you got a lot of good feedback. You had a lot of love on that thing, and I think, yeah, you probably will have people who want to help support that. You're a young woman. You've have helped Solid since the beginning. You know, you and your sister Katrina had volunteered your coaching for well over a year to help mold other young people in the community. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be people out in the community who want to still continue to help mold you going forward.
And that would be a beautiful thing.
I know I complimented you earlier, but your hair is looking beautiful and stylish.
Thank you, because I just got a haircut from Crystal, aka Wifey. You know, she does her work, and every time it comes out better and better. And that's at Charmed Hair Studio,
yep. And she specializes in brunettes.
But recently she's been doing hair extensions. Luckily, I was fortunate with just locks of hair, you know.
Yeah, well, from what I'm learning, extensions are for not only length, but for volume as well. You can get fancy with the styling.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I think that's good for this one. Bear, I appreciate your time. I hope you gained some value off of this and that you can potentially use this as a tool. There, even though I had all this in my head, even just writing it out and going through a timeline helped bring up things that I didn't think about. So it's a helpful tool, even if you know where your origin story is, just to go. It just brings up the depth of self-awareness.
No, most definitely. I got to learn more about you, which I love, but also now I know, or kind of gave me a structure, a blueprint on how I could get my origin story or find it and understand myself a little bit more. So I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I love you.
Love you.